Kia ora and welcome to Airman's Podcast, episode 195. Today is Tuesday, February 9, 2010. It is bloody hot at our house. It's been about 34 degrees this afternoon, which is about 93 in U.S. Fahrenheit temperature. I say about because the temperature fluctuates a little bit as clouds go overhead and things. Although the clouds haven't been going overhead nearly enough today, I'll have you know. I'm sitting at my desk underneath an air conditioning vent, and I'm still hot. Oh, actually, I haven't. I don't think I ever updated whatever happened with the air conditioning. We called out the people who installed it to do a service and to check it out, and it turns out that there was very little of the gas left inside it, less than half or the quarter or something. I don't remember. Anyway, it was nowhere near enough, and that's why it wouldn't work. They said that they thought it might be a bit low, but it turns out it was more than a bit low. I don't think that they've checked the gas since we had it put in about 3 years ago. So, I mean, I don't know, maybe that's normal. But it was recharged, and it is working much better. But it just can't cope with the high temperatures. And so it's still a bit uncomfortable around our house. Nigel complains about it more than I do, because I don't actually mind the heat that much. Especially because I know that once the sun goes down, it's going to cool off. So I'm not all that concerned about it. And at night, sometimes I even get cold, actually. But anyway, that's what's been going on in our neck of the woods. Of course, last week was a very busy week for me. It's the busiest week of the month because I have a work project that's the first business week of every month. And this was a busy week, but got through it. It was a bit busier than it should have been because I had some interruptions, none the least of which was that Monday was Auckland Anniversary Day. Now, I have talked about this before, but for the benefit of new listeners, the anniversary weekends that are on the calendar, it varies around the country, and it corresponds, generally speaking, to the 19th century provinces that used to exist. So Auckland Anniversary Day is observed not just in Auckland, but in, I think, most of the Waikato and the Coromandel Peninsula and all the way up through Northland, even though none of that is part of Auckland because, of course, New Zealand no longer has any provinces. They were abolished a long time ago. So it's sort of a, I don't know, kind of a holdover or whatever, throwback. I don't care what it is. It's a day off. That's all that matters. So that kind of threw a spanner in the works and slowed down the work a bit. So it's a bit more time compressed than it probably should have been. But never mind. I got there in the end, and that's all that matters. Of course, this past Saturday was another holiday. It was Waitangi Day, which is New Zealand's national holiday. And those of you who listen to Big Fatty Online may have heard him talk about that. It was briefly called New Zealand Day, but it's been called, that was only for 4 years, maybe 5 years. I'm not sure. And it's been called Waitangi Day most of the time that it's existed. Now, in years past, Waitangi Day has been a major, what's the word I'm looking for? Controversial day, majorly controversial day, because it was the day when very often Maori activists would press their grievances. And it was getting to the point where people just couldn't be bothered with the whole Waitangi Day thing. It was too controversial. And plus, which New Zealanders, as a general rule, aren't terribly, you know, flag-waving, patriotic anyway, not like Australians or Americans, certainly. And so Waitangi Day was always just sort of a day off, if anything. Two things about that. First, well, I should say, first of all, that this year was completely peaceful, so we didn't have any of those protests. And actually, they've been declining, maybe the past 5 years, I'd say. It's been getting lighter and lighter. But Waitangi Day is one of the public holidays that's not Mondayized, which means that if it falls on a Saturday or Sunday, it's observed on a Saturday or Sunday, and the people who work Monday through Friday then miss out on one of the public holidays. So people are a bit bitter about that because we have 11 public holidays a year, and we lost one of them this year because of Waitangi Day falling on a Saturday. But apparently it's even worse next year because Waitangi Day is on a Sunday, and Anzac Day will fall on Easter Monday. So that means that we'll lose two public holidays next year. And as I've discussed before, public holidays in New Zealand are really public holidays in that almost everyone has the day off. And if there are only 3.5 days where there are total trading bans in New Zealand, where theoretically almost nobody is supposed to be working, the rest of them, if you are rostered to work on that day normally, you get paid time and a half and you get a day off in lieu, which means you get another day off some other time in the year. So, you know, it's not that big a thing, except that on public holidays, even when they fall on a weekend, this is still true, if you're normally rostered, you get that time. So what restaurants and cafes have been doing is charging a surcharge on public holidays of 10%, 15%, 20% extra. And there are, I have two minds about that. First of all, it seems to me that their failure to plan doesn't constitute a reason for me to pay extra. But putting that aside, they're small businesses, and I know that the margins at most cafes are razor thin, so they have to be able to recover their costs somehow, one would think. But then there are other places like McDonald's that, being big chains, obviously can afford to absorb some extra costs that make a point of not charging a surcharge on public holidays. And some small cafes have done the same thing and have increased their business as a result of it. And I think that if I owned a cafe, obviously it would be a small one that I was working in, I would do the same thing. I would make a point of not charging a surcharge on public holidays and just let the increase in business take care of the increased cost. Because quite frankly, we're not talking about a lot of money. The amount of extra pay that you're probably paying, say, wait staff, for instance, for a public holiday isn't enough to justify charging 20% extra to your customers. And I just think it's silly. And when it first started, when the fad started, it was kind of a reaction because these cafe owners and, well, hospitality trade, as they call it, were pissed off about having to pay their employees time and a half and give them a day off in lieu. And so it was sort of a retaliation more than anything. And if I were to lay a wager, I would say that it will eventually start to fade away because it's really not necessary, especially if you plan ahead. I mean, you could have a special, for instance, where you charge a little bit more than you would for a normal special, and if you sold enough of them, you'd easily cover your costs because, as I said, we're not talking about that much money. But anyway, I don't want to get into that. The main thing that happened this Waitangi Day was it unleashed a debate about the New Zealand flag. Now, that happens from time to time, and it sometimes happens around Waitangi Day, actually, because it's supposed to be our national holiday. But what is interesting about it is that almost everyone seems to be accepting that a change in the flag is inevitable. And there are a number of reasons for this. First, I mean, there are a lot of people who say that, you know, there are, what, something like 15 or 20 countries in the world whose flags have the British Union Jack in the corner, not counting Britain. And even the state of Hawaii has the British Union Jack in the corner. But ours is very similar to Australia's and is often confused with Australia's. As a matter of fact, there was an incident some years back where the Australian Prime Minister was visiting some foreign country and they raised the New Zealand flag because they even got confused. So this is a common thing. And Australia, I should say, also talks about changing their flag from time to time, and the current Prime Minister has poo-pooed the idea, apparently. Well, our Prime Minister was on the breakfast program the other day, and he actually doodled a flag and said that he would like to see a change, but it's not on the government's agenda, which is what they always say about that and about becoming a republic. Yes, it's inevitable, but it's not on our agenda. So one day it will be on the agenda, I'd say. The main opponent has been the RSA, the Return Services Association, which is kind of like American Foreign Legion or VFW or something like that. It's a veterans group, basically, who wanted to keep the flag as it is. They have subtly changed their policy now, where they say that they will back a change if that's what the people want. In other words, if the people move to change the flag, then they'll support it, which is different from saying no way, no how, which is what they used to say. Apparently, the RSA in Canterbury region still says no way, no how. Some of the people still say the same sort of silly things that they say in other countries, like, soldiers died for that flag. Well, I hope they didn't. I hope that they died for their country and not for the piece of cloth that is its emblem. Because, I mean, after all, what's important is the country, not its symbol, I would have thought. But the thing about New Zealand's flag is that a lot of people feel it's not distinctive. It doesn't say anything about New Zealand because the two main elements on it are the British Union Jack, our colonial past, and the Southern Cross, which is not unique to New Zealand. It's throughout the Southern Hemisphere. The leading contender among many people is to replace it with a silver fern, to put the silver fern on the flag, because the silver fern is the emblem that is worn by all of our athletes. It's worn often by, anyone who's trying to represent New Zealand overseas, where as an American politician, you'll very often see a little U.S. flag on the lapel. A New Zealand politician will often have a silver fern pin on their lapel. And so there's a lot of feeling behind that. It sort of represents New Zealand. However, the favorite, I suppose, way of displaying that has generally been on a black flag, which relates to the New Zealand All Blacks, or national rugby team. And most of our sports teams wear black, actually, and they have the silver fern on their chest. But there are a lot of people who say, "Oh, we can't have a black national flag. It's like pirates or something." And I'm thinking, what? First of all, I think that's mostly Hollywood. I haven't done any research into this, but I don't know if that's actually real, that they actually flew a black flag with the skull and crossbones on it. Maybe someone can enlighten me so I don't have to look it up. But it would be totally unique because there is no country's flag that is black. And there's certainly no way that our flag would ever be confused with or mistaken for another country's flag. So in that sense, it would be really good. But the main thing, I think, is the silver fern emblem. And I think that that's likely to ultimately be on whatever our flag ends up being. And the thinking is that the silver fern could be as emblematic of New Zealand as the maple leaf is for Canada. And I think there's certainly a great possibility of that. And it would be nice to have a flag that, I don't know, is so clearly distinctive from other countries that, as the Canadians do, young Kiwis can sew the country's flag onto the backpack. And people know what it is and won't confuse it with something else in our case, which certainly the Canadians don't have to worry about. But anyway, that was the main event this year for Waitangi Day. In Wellington, some guy from the Republican Party, which in New Zealand is not like anything like the U.S., it's a party whose mission or whatever is to found a New Zealand republic, to end the monarchy, burned the New Zealand flag. And, you know, I think people who burn flags are dorks. I really do. Not because they shouldn't be doing what they're doing, because I've often said that any flag that has to be protected by law from burning isn't worth having. That, you know, even symbolic freedom of speech should be protected. And if somebody wants to burn the flag as a protest, as this joker did, that's their right. And I don't have a problem with that. However, I think it's incredibly stupid to do that because you just piss off the people who have a strong emotional attachment to that flag, and you're not going to get anything by doing that. You're not going to win any friends or influence people by burning a flag. You just look like a petulant little child. And so even though I absolutely support the right of people to burn their country's flag, I think it's really a stupid thing to do under pretty much any circumstance I can think of. But anyway, I digress. Now, I have some things in New Zealand news today. And first of all,
how bizarre! How bizarre! How bizarre!
The lead singer in that song, Polifuimana, died a week ago Sunday, January 31st, after a short illness. Now, he and OMC took that song to number one in several countries, and it was charted in several others, which makes it the most successful pop song ever to come out of New Zealand, which is a pretty big deal, really. Especially for a little country on the edge of the world. They did record some other songs. They were charted here in New Zealand, but I don't believe that they got any chart action in other countries, although I could be wrong about that. Now, OMC is an acronym, actually. It stands for Otara Millionaires Club, which is meant ironically because Otara is one of the poorest parts of Auckland. It's South Auckland. It is mostly Polynesian, Maori and Polynesian. And one of the things that it's famous for is the Otara markets, which are held on Saturdays. And you used to be able to go there and get all kinds of Pacific Island delights like taro and palasami and all kinds of other things. Nowadays, the stallholders are I shouldn't say mostly, but they're largely, anyway, Chinese people, not so much the Pacific Islanders that it used to be. So it's sort of changed into more of a flea market now than the kind of exciting, vibrant Pacific Island market that it used to be. But, hey, you know, things change. An update to something I talked about last time, the Saga with a Good Morning show. They introduced a new presenter yesterday. The show finally resumed after a two-month Christmas break, and they introduced a new third co-host. And so they certainly weren't getting rid of the gay guy to cut costs. Now, I've blogged about this, and I headlined it as TVNZ homophobic, and I don't actually have an answer to that question. I don't know if they are or not. But I do know that the introduction of the new co-host seemed to me to be rather aggressively heterosexual in the way they approached it. And I talk about that, and I quote the dialogue and so on. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes and you can see what my follow-up to that was. In more recent news, the Parliament resumed today. Now, every time this happens, I think to myself, could they just stay away the rest of the year? But I think probably a lot of people feel that way. So because it's the start of the new year, Prime Minister delivers a speech to Parliament laying out the government's program for the year. And among the things that Prime Minister John Key has proposed is an increase in GST, goods and services tax, from 12.5% to 15%. And the reason they're doing that, or want to do that, is because they want to cut the taxes for rich people, primarily. Now, of course, he says that's not it. It'll be across-the-board tax cuts, which is never the way it works out. The National Party, which is the party he leads, historically has cut taxes for the higher income brackets and done little or nothing for the lower income brackets, you know, anybody from the middle down. And there's no reason to think they'll do anything differently this time. However, we won't know that for sure until May when the budget is released. And in the meantime, they're going to be looking at taxes and so on. Now, there's been a lot that's been going on in New Zealand about this. Under pressure from the far right ACT Party, which is a neoconservative party, which is part of the government coalition, they put together two working groups. One was on competitiveness, which was silly right-wing gibberish. And then the other one was looking at tax policy. Now, that one was supposed to be more, rational, because it was supposed to have academics and accountants, people who were more experts at how things work, how finances work. Well, it didn't end up that way. It ended up being just more right-wing nonsense. And among the things that they wanted is they wanted the GST raised to 15% or more. They wanted a land tax, and I'm not exactly sure what that is, but the Prime Minister ruled it out. They wanted a capital gains tax, I think across the board, and the Prime Minister has ruled out an across-the-board capital gains tax, but he hinted that they might do that for people who invest in property. And they wanted all kinds of other things to basically make things better for the higher up you go in the income chain. Now, I'm not going to get into this in any great detail, partly because it's boring, but also because I think it's fairly obvious where I stand on such things, that I don't support regressive taxes like GST, because I don't buy the argument that you can always cut consumption to save on taxes, because the thing about New Zealand's GST is that it's on absolutely everything. You pay taxes on food, on medicine, on any service you get. You pay GST on taxes. You pay GST rates, property, which are like property taxes. You pay GST on virtually everything imaginable. There's almost nothing I can think of offhand that isn't taxed, except bank charges. You know, your monthly bank fees. I think that's about it. Almost everything else carries GST, which means that for an average person living an average life, it is impossible to avoid GST, and you can't cut back on it either, because what are you going to do? Eliminate food? You eliminate water? You eliminate heat? What are you supposed to do without in order to cut back in GST? I think that there's going to be months of merriment between the left and the right in New Zealand as they fight over these tax policies, and it'll be kind of interesting to see what ultimately emerges, but it's going to be couple more months anyway before we start hearing any details of what's going to happen with taxes. So those are some of the items in the New Zealand news I wanted to share. Right, now some updates. First, some news that some of you have been anxious to hear and others have probably been dreading. The return of the live Amrens podcast is this week. It will be Thursday, February 11th in the US and Friday, February 12th here in New Zealand, of course. And the topic this week will be the state of the gaze, which in a sense is a continuation on from the last episode of last year, where we were talking about the year in review and that sort of stuff. Well, we're going to be looking ahead this time. Of course, the president mentioned the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the State of the Union address, and the generals are behind it. So we might be talking about that and various other issues that are likely to come up in this and election year. Also, one of those issues could be immigration reform. And I, hopefully this week, will be recording an interview with someone from Immigration Equality. Now, they're a group that's working to try to equalize the way that GLBT couples are treated by immigration. As it is right now, of course, a heterosexual can marry their partner and sponsor them for immigration, but a gay and lesbian person cannot do that. And it is, of course, the reason why I'm in New Zealand. The only way that Nigel and I could be together was if I came to this country, because New Zealand had a path for citizens and permanent residents to sponsor their partners, and the U.S. didn't and still doesn't. So I'm going to be speaking with her sometime this week, hopefully. It was supposed to be tomorrow originally, but she's a victim of the snowpocalypse. She hasn't been able to get back to Washington. I guess you could say she's snowed out instead of snowed in. But anyway, when she gets back and gets established, then we're going to reschedule and record it. So that I may post that this week, or it might be early next week. I don't know. We'll just have to see how it goes. But that's something that's coming up. There, at some stage, there will be a Two Political podcast. I don't know when. I suppose at the moment Jason's probably exhausted from shoveling snow. But we're definitely going to have one of those coming up soon. And, of course, there's the live podcast this Friday. That one is pretty much for certain. Two Political may or may not happen this week. I don't know. And the interview with the woman from Immigration Equality may actually be the first part of next week now. But we'll see how we go. See how things shake out. So those are some things going on. Also, just kind of a category. I was helping a researcher who's looking into alternative media at a university here in New Zealand, and as a result of that, I was asked to talk at a conference of GLBT university students in the middle of the year. And there's really nothing more to say about it at this stage because, I mean, I don't know, they may go in a different direction and it may not end up happening. So, but if it does, it may give me the opportunity to do some interviews while I'm in Christchurch. And so we'll see how that goes, and I'll certainly keep you posted. But it is shaping up that this year I'm finally getting back to being able to have more interviews and guests and things like that, which is always kind of fun and exciting for me anyway. I don't know about anybody else, but anyway. So finally today, I have comments on my previous episode, 194. And the first comment was from John Q. Public, who said, "I was quite taken with the broadcast of Puru's coming out and had forwarded links to several other sites before hearing about it on yours. Congrats to him. Has there been any follow-up that might not have gotten back to our shores? Any pushback or other news?" And I actually replied in writing, and I said, "Mike's coming out was pretty much a non-event among the mainstream media. GayNZ.com has published an interview," and I have a link to that, "with Mike, in which he says that the feedback's been 99.99% positive," and that's a quote. "They had one religious nut say they wouldn't listen anymore, but according to Mike, quote, 'My boss said we don't need those people listening anyway,' close quote. So it looks like a happy story, and I haven't heard anything since. And like I said, it was pretty much a non-event. We just don't have the religious or social conservative nut jobs like the U.S. unfortunately is plagued with. And the ones that we do have just can't be bothered with something like that. So, yeah, so far so good. And then the next comment was from Roger Green, who said, "And speaking of religious nuts and Sarah Palin," and then provides a link to a blog post about a church. Well, you have to read it yourself, but it has to do with homosexuality and a Baptist church. How's that for being vague? And to make you go to my site to find out what it's all about. But I'm just like that, I am. But that is it for today. There, as I said, there may be one more podcast this week, but apart from the live one, there may be a Two Political this week. Who knows? We'll see how it goes. But thanks for listening, and be sure to join us at the live podcast on pride48.com. It will be Thursday, February 11th, starting at about 8 p.m. Eastern North American time. I say about because, you know, it won't be. And that is Friday, February 12th here in Auckland and, well, Australia too, for that matter. That's it for today. Have a great rest of the week, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye. You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amrens Podcast at amrenspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amrenspodcast.com. Or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.